The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, the 8th day of February, 2013. The Dow is up 48 points. S&P is up 7.5. The comp is up 29. Gold down $3. Crude up 36 cents. And here we sit at the high of the week on a Friday. Headed into the weekend, and one of the biggest storms, quite a number of years. I probably don't have to tell you, especially if you live on the East Coast, that you're in for a chilly and wet weekend. Airlines have already canceled close to 3,000 flights within, to, or from the U.S. on Friday. 815 flights are already canceled on Saturday. New York's Metropolitan Transit Authority has warned it will shut down bus service before the worst of the storm hits, and work on the subway for this weekend has been canceled. To keep subways running, it will activate its impressive arsenal of equipment, including 4 jet-powered snow throwers that can remove 3,000 tons of snow in an hour. Okay, if you got snow in your driveway, call these guys. Now, some lines that normally run express will be operating on local tracks. The 1, 2, 3, and 7 trains are running with delays. The Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority is suspending all service, including subways, buses, commuter, rail, boats, starting at 3:30 p.m. this afternoon. Amtrak is suspending service from New York City to Boston starting this afternoon. The LIRR and Metro North are working to keep tracks clear of snow and trains running in the cold conditions. Both railroads are running extra afternoon trains to get people out of the city. Evening service may be suspended if conditions are bad enough. The National Weather Service has warned of scattered power outages. So if you're in the path of this storm, guys, hunker down, get a good book, get some candles, or some kind of battery-operated lighting, because you might be without power for a little while. But it's going to pass. The National Weather Service says this is not Sandy. We're not going to end up with storms all over the road, or trees all over the road. I think this thing's supposed to pass through fairly quickly. But it's going to be heavy, so watch out. On a lighter note, Google, in their ongoing quest to dominate the world, wants to build their own airport. The search giant has proposed building an $82 million private airport at Mineta San Jose International Airport. There's a very strong chance the offer will be accepted. The 29-acre airport proposal is facilitated by Signature, a San Jose-based company that currently handles Google's private jets. Now, Signature's proposal will develop the west side of the airport under a 50-year lease. Further details include a 17,000-square-foot terminal, a 33,000-square-foot building for offices and retail, a 66,000-square-foot hangar, 18.5 acres for aircraft parking, and a 300-space parking lot. William Sherry, the San Jose Director of Aviation, along with four other evaluators, gave Signature's plan a 991 out of 1,000 rating. Officials like the plan because of the likelihood to create jobs and additional revenues for the airport and the city's general fund. One thing to have your own private jet, and Google doesn't just have a private jet, they have a fleet, they have jets. One thing to have your own private plane, but to have your own private airport. Wow, that's impressive. There are some reasons, perhaps, to get really excited about Apple making an iWatch. Now, you got a phone that already tells you what time it is, but everybody really seems to be hot for the new watches. There are already quite a few of them out there. Everyone's waiting for Apple to unveil theirs. We've already got the Cuckoo Watch, the Pebble. Sources say that Google is working on a version, and reports have emerged that Apple plans to also make a smartwatch. I mean, I haven't even, since the cell phone came along, I haven't worn a watch, period, in many years, but I've got the time on my phone. It seems a little redundant, but according to Bruce Tognazzini, with the Nielsen Norman Group and a former Apple employee who specializes in human-computer interaction. Imagine you're at a family dinner and somebody goes, "Well, what do you do for a living, Sonny?" "I specialize in human-computer interaction." Okay. He says that an Apple iWatch could have a vast impact on our lives. Here are several reasons why you should be really excited if Apple does make an iWatch. Apple can solve the having to remove the watch from your arm problem by implementing wireless charging, which the company holds a patent for. Apple's patent for curved glass screens could help reduce the clunky factor. There won't be a bunch of buttons and menus because Siri will be able to handle complex tasks for you. The iWatch could facilitate communication with your iPhone so you can see who's calling. it could eliminate the need for typing in passwords on Apple devices. You may never lose your iPhone again because the iWatch will alert you if you get too far away from your iPhone. It could use sensors to track how many calories you're burning, how many miles you're walking, and monitor things like your blood pressure. And if it has an NFC chip in it, then you could buy stuff by simply swiping your hand over a reader to make payments. Not the palm of your hand, like the Bible says, but you would be, I guess, swiping your wrist over the reader. Now, some people do wear their watch with the face of the watch facing the inside of the arm. I have seen that. It's not uncommon. And in that case, you would sort of be swiping your palm over it, but I don't think that's the point of this article. It will be the point of future articles, though. The iWatch would also very likely support music functions. The iWatch could function as a remote control via compatibility with Siri. And Apple could use the iWatch to fix its maps by using crowdsourced pressure data. Okay. Those are the reasons, according to Bruce, why you should be excited if Apple comes through with the iWatch. I probably won't buy one. You also probably heard, and this may be more meaningful to you than an iWatch, a company in the UK got busted their lasagna, not for having some horse meat in it, but it was all horse meat. Now, this is from the Business Insider. Whenever we post a story about the ongoing horse meat scandal in the UK and Ireland, there are a number of comments from people suggesting that the British should be fine with eating horse meat, as many other nations see no problem with eating meat from the animal. It is true, of course, that many European nations do eat horse meat. A person from London can easily jump on a plane and within a few hours be eating a horse meat pizza in Slovenia, for example. But the scandal is bigger than just a matter of cultural distaste about eating horses. It carries serious health concerns. One worrying aspect of the latest report of horse meat in the frozen lasagna being sold in the UK is the news that the meat is being tested for the veterinary drug Bute, which is a known human health risk. The BBC reports that Bute, also known as phenylbutazone, is toxic to humans and can cause a serious blood disorder known as aplastic anemia. It is used as an anti-inflammatory for horses, but once treated, these animals are not supposed to join the food chain. The UK itself slaughters around 8,000 horses a year to be exported to other countries for food. These horses are tested before they go. But McGrath reports that UK's Veterinary Residues Committee warned just last year that these tests were not enough and small but noticeable amounts of Bute seem to be getting through. Other countries, including the US and Canada, have different rules and may export horses who have been treated with Bute. So while horse meat itself is intrinsically no less safe than beef, the drugs within it that give are what give cause for concern. Given that the contamination in the UK seems to have been caused by what the UK's Food Standard Authority describes as criminal and fraudulent activity, is extremely worrying that the meat, or really anything that shouldn't be there, can make its way into the UK's food chain without anyone noticing. Also bear in mind that the UK was the center, it was ground zero, for the mad cow disease scandal, which ultimately saw over 4 million cows slaughtered in a bid to eradicate the disease and almost 200 cases of its human form, which is called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Given that history, food chain-related paranoia is pretty understandable and maybe a good reason to consider becoming a vegetarian. Now, the final little bit of news you've got to find surprising I found it surprising. Remember AOL? Mm-hmm. That company, America Online. Now, once upon a time when we had a computer, bought a computer, we just had a blinking cursor on our screen. That was the computer experience. Then along came a thing called DOS. And then along came a thing called bulletin boards. And then along came a thing called CompuServe. And then along came a company called America Online, AOL. And everything changed. And for a while, you couldn't go anywhere. Convenience stores, gas stations, there were these little CDs, compact discs, on the counter. AOL, free. You could get a free trial. It was like 30 days, whatever. And it was sort of unheard of, and because the compact disc itself was a little bit new, the CD. Computer CD was really kind of a new concept, more so even than music. And everywhere you went, they came in the mail. You go to the mailbox a couple times a week, and there would be one of these CDs from AOL, you know, just begging you, brightly colored, please, please put me in your computer. And people did. And for a lot of Americans, that was our first introduction to the Internet. In fact, this was really before the World Wide Web existed. There weren't a whole lot of websites out there. Once you got online, you didn't really go beyond AOL because there wasn't anywhere else to go. There was a few places, but AOL was the destination. That was the Internet for a number of years, and for some people, it still is. AOL just released quasi-profit numbers for each of its divisions for the first time. As expected, AOL's dial-up subscription business, the business that powered AOL to astounding global success in the 90s, still accounts for the vast majority of AOL's profits. Now, I went back and read this again and again. I thought they meant to say unexpectedly, but they say as expected. In fact, AOL's subscription business, this is where people pay a monthly fee to dial up over an ordinary telephone line and connect, generates more than all of the other companies' profits combined. Now, this is also bad news because AOL's subscription business is still shrinking. Well, it's been shrinking since 2000. Here we are, 13 years later, it's still shrinking. That was a big business. So all those CDs that they mailed out and put in convenience stores and gas stations and grocery stores apparently paid off. The shrinking business still throws off an amazing amount of cash. It's like 20 bucks a month. At least that's what it was back then when I put that first disc in the computer. That shrinking business still throws off $500 million a year. That's money AOL can use and is using to invest in other cool businesses like content and ads that aren't making them any real money. And the shrinking dial-up business is shrinking at a much slower rate than it used to because AOL is finding ways to add other value for its subscribers. In fact, it is not inconceivable that AOL will find ways to add enough value for its subscribers that the subscription business will soon stop shrinking and start growing again. And if that happens, wow, AOL will have a built-in marketing engine, content and ad network, with which it can market subscriptions at a very low cost. And given the profitability of this business, AOL's profit could suddenly begin to grow very rapidly. I find that so amazing. Michael, do you find that amazing?
I do find that amazing.
Dial-up internet. Yeah. Still making AOL $500 million a year.
I find that shocking, actually, because I didn't think there were that many people that use dial-up anymore.
I didn't think anybody. I mean, when's the last time you heard the sound of a modem, except when I play that little sound file here on the radio? I mean, I haven't heard one in a decade,
yeah,
I'm thinking.
On purpose.
Yeah, on purpose. Right. So, I guess, for people in rural areas. Or maybe there's some people who just signed up, you know, in 2001, and they put it on their credit card, and maybe it's just been there getting billed every month at, you know, $9.95 or $19.95, whatever it is. Maybe they don't even pay it any attention or give it any thought. I don't know. I do know that the marketing campaign that they had when they first rolled out was unlike anything we had ever seen before. Here was this company that everywhere you went, it was in your face. Those little discs. Boy, I bet we had 20, 30 of them at any given time laying around the office, the house. They were everywhere. They were like those little animals that reproduced, those little furry animals in that movie. What were they called? You know what I'm talking about?
The Gremlins?
Yeah, the Gremlins. It's like they were everywhere, man. They just kept... I could probably go through one of my drawers today and still find a couple of them. So apparently, though, that marketing campaign really did pay off because here they are, making the big bucks. Everything else that they do is supported by people who still are paying for dial-up internet. Imagine that. All right, well, that's pretty much it, guys. The chart in front of you is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. High of the week, 1515. Mr. David Williams, he told us to watch for 1515. There it is. Ding, ding, ding. Now, we got a weekly zone here at 1511, 1512. We got a weekly zone above that at 2122. Now, price popped through. It's pulled back. We put in this doji right here. And there was a question in the live trading room. We had a great live trading room this morning. A lot of new people showed up. Glad to have you with us. Hope you'll join us again on Monday, those of you that want to take the free trial. Now, we pulled back into the zone, found support. We talked about trading off of this doji and what it meant for the bigger picture. And I said, well, after this, you know, the context is beautiful after the run-up. Look to get short below the low of this doji. Unfortunately, we're sitting right on top of a weekly trading zone, which is providing some support. So we're going to have to wait and see. You know, again, there's room to the upside and there's time left in the day, but the market may have used up its energy getting up to this area here. Now, we put in the low of the week back here on Monday at 1491/92. That was the low of the week, weekly trading zone. We worked our way up through the 97-98 area, got up into the 0405. And our initial high on the week was right here, 1511. Okay, that came into the tick. To the tick, we had a double top there. Price pulled back in between the double top to find support at the 0405 area. Last night, yesterday, we made a dive back down to the 97-98 area. Found support once again. And then we consolidated for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours here at 0405. Made a run, came back for another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. And then this morning, blast off. That took us to the high of the week. That took us to fresh new 5-year highs. Okay? So we've got the futures over 1500, we've got the S&P cash over 1500, we've got the Dow's over 14,000, correct? No, 13,994. Okay, so the Dow's got a little catching up to do. All right, well, we'll watch it throughout the radio program. We'll go to Michael now. He'll do the recap of all of our activities this morning in the live trading room, the markets we traded, the setups as they came about. Once Michael is done with that, we'll go to David out at pagetrader.com. And then this afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern, be sure to tune in right here for the Coach's Corner. You don't have to go anywhere. When the radio program is over, just leave this window open. And at 3 p.m. Eastern, promptly, we'll start. It's a 30-minute program with Robin Dane, the trading coach. Hope you can all make it. Michael, it's all yours.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. I'll take the charts over here. Hang on just a second. There we go. All right. You guys should be looking at my charts now. And you are. Good.
Got them.
All right. Well, let's just get started. I'm going to do FYI for you and for everyone else. With the funeral and everything that I had going on this week, we got a little mixed up with the recaps, and we didn't get all the recaps together out on YouTube yet. We don't even have recaps for some days. So what I'm going to do is just do a summation of the first week. I'm not going to do all the trades. I'm just going to do all the results of the first week on a day-by-day basis. Okay? Just so everybody knows what I'm talking about. All right. All right. Hello, today is Friday, February 8th, 2013. I want to go over all the results from the live trading room so far this month. This is the first week results that I'm going to go over with you. Let's just go over them day by day, all right? On February 1st, we had minus 8 ticks on crude, plus 19 ticks on gold for a total of plus 110 per contract. On the 4th of February, we had plus 15 ticks on crude oil, plus 22 ticks on gold for a total of plus 370 per contract. On the 5th of February, we had minus 19 ticks on crude oil, plus 24 ticks on gold, plus 4 ticks on the yen for a plus 100 per contract. On the 6th of February, we had plus 1 tick on the ES, plus 10 ticks on crude oil, and plus 4 ticks on gold for plus $152.50 per contract. On the 7th of February, we had plus 8 ticks on crude, minus 16 ticks on gold for a minus $80 per contract. And today, we had minus 4 ticks on crude and plus 17 ticks on gold for plus $130 per contract. Okay, now let me go over one other little statistic here. So far for the month of February, to get 2 points on the 1st, it took 4 minutes and 2 trades. On the 4th, it took 5 minutes and 1 trade. On the 5th, it took 155 minutes and 12 trades. On the 6th, it took 23 minutes and 1 trade. On the 7th, we didn't get 2 points. And today, it took 94 minutes and 7 trades. All right, that's all the information. All the information to get all the trades, to get all the profits. Okay, I just wanted to put all that out there for you so everybody has it. And now, we are updated up to now for the month of February. Today, we had, as I said, we had minus 4 ticks on crude oil, plus 17 ticks on gold. We started off the day, we had a rough start to the day again, and we actually recorded almost the whole morning session that we did. We had recorded it. But let's start off with crude oil, okay? I think we lost our first 3 trades today, just like we did yesterday, but we came back from it today, and mostly in a single trade. My first crude trade was right here, all right? Wait a minute. Before I go any further, if you haven't taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for our free trial. In our free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room. You get access to Dwayne and I. You get access to our weekly trading zones. You get access to all of our indicators and everything we have to offer, okay, except the weekly partners meetings and access to the members area. You get everything else, so you can really test it out and try it for the first week. And, you know, and if it works out for you, then great. It's, it's a win-win. All right. Again, that's www.cfrn.net/apply, okay? Now, we had a great partners meeting last night. I showed a bunch of guys. There were a bunch of people in there, and I showed them all a new way to interpret the black line and use the black line. You have to be a partner, get into the partners meeting and see that. time to get into the workshops. Hopefully we'll have that workshop posted by the end of the day sometime. Okay. It's in the members area. All right, so the first trade, we had a bearish cross. Let me bring up my pictures here. This is a look at the short side of this over here. Okay. The MA1 is the blue and red line, crosses down below the BBC. Bearish cross, step one. Space is step two. Pullback and test to the BBC with a down close is step three. And bearish divergence is step four. It looks like right here, you can't see it. Right here was the down close off the BBC. This one stopped me out to the tick, and then it went down and gave the profit that I would have anticipated. All right, but it stopped me out to the tick first, and then it went down. The next opportunity here, it was not the same type of setup. It was a little bit different setup. Same indicators, all that stuff, same time frame, but what I was looking for here was a confirmation of the continuation by a close down below this trend line. We got the close below the trend line, and it just turned around on me and went in the opposite direction. That happens from time to time, all right? And it happened to me today. Unfortunately, I got two stop-outs in a row, though. The next opportunity here, we took the bounce off the BBC. We could have entered right there, but I was waiting for the confirmation with the close above the trend line. So I took that, and it went, I think, seven ticks profit. I took two or three out of it, I think. The next opportunity here on the crude oil was over here, where this didn't pull back to the BBC, and this is a very close copy to what we did over here. All right, you see the price didn't pull all the way back to the BBC like that. So I drew the trend line in there, and we got the close down below the trend line with the bearish divergence. So we were able to jump in on that close down below the trend line with the bearish divergence, and we took some profit on that. Okay. The next opportunity was over here. It's just like this one, but on the other side. It didn't hit the BBC. We waited for it to close above the trend line, and we took some more profit on that. That was right at the end of the morning session. All right. You can see in here there were more opportunities during the break here, and while Dwayne was talking earlier when he was going over the headlines. Right in here was a nice spot right there, and over here, a nice spot right here. All right, and there's another one about to happen right over here. Another one actually happening right now. It was right here on this down close. 95.73 would have been the spot to short right there. I'll draw the trend line for you so you can see it, but there it is, the down close right there, 95.73. There was even another one that I missed right in here. We didn't really have any divergence. All right, but that was crude oil. Okay, so we ended the morning down a little bit on crude because we had those first two losses right away. But that's okay, you know. It's okay to be down a little bit if you make it up on other markets. This is the Russell. Now, we had an opportunity in here this morning on the Russell, this up close right here. I hadn't had my Russell Dom open yet. I did open it after that, but then it got stuck inside this weekly trading zone and just stayed there. But there was a nice opportunity right here. The same picture that I had a minute ago, you know, the same thing applies. It's all the same stuff over and over and over again. No matter what market you're looking at, it's all the same stuff. Okay. Let me just point that out. Here's a little bit of bullish divergence. It didn't pull all the way back to test the BBC. We then got the close up above this trend line that I had drawn on here. That was the spot to get in there and get long. Okay. Looking for the green line to work its way into the cycle, which it did do. All right. Now, back here on this crude oil, you're looking for the green line to work its way down into the cycle, which it's about to do. If you got into this trade, you want to see it break this level right here, you would be reducing your risk. There it goes right there, right into the cycle. Okay? That's a perfect example of what you anticipate when you have a trade like this. Okay? No, Gary, we don't have weekly zones for the crude oil. But that's exactly what you would be looking for right there. Okay? Exactly what you would be looking for. Live, in real time, right in front of you. Alright, we didn't do anything else with the Russell today. Okay? Now, gold. As I said, we started off a little rough again this morning. We started off with three losing trades again, I think, just like yesterday. I gotta stop starting off like that. But we started off with a loss here on gold. We had an up close right there, and it came down, stopped me out to the tick, and then it moved up again, back to break even, and then it went down. So that wasn't as significant as being stopped out to the tick and then having it run to a profit target. But anyway, we missed that one, but we jumped in over here on the close, this up close right here. We jumped in on this trade, and it gave us, I think we took 25 ticks profit on this move right here. All right, so that wiped out that loss there and the two losses that we had on crude oil. We were actually, from this trade alone right here, we were profitable on the morning. Okay. Yeah, that was it. Bang. It pulled back down, hit the BBC. Now, we didn't have any divergence down here to trade it. You guys will notice this black line in here. That was from the partners meeting last night. We didn't have an opportunity to trade it in here because we didn't have any divergence. Okay, I shouldn't actually even have that little thing right there because that was the close above. It was the close above the BBC, but we didn't have any divergence to take the trade in there. There was, however, some nice divergence over here, an opportunity to short there and over here to short. And over here, we did actually short. Here, there was another shorting opportunity. Over here, I don't know why I have that highlighted right there. I think I have it highlighted because I don't know why I have it highlighted. There was nothing there. But that was the end of the morning session, and that was it on gold. All right, we ended up plus 17 ticks on gold. So we had, you know, a pretty good morning on the gold. I think we could have done a lot more trading on the gold if we would have focused on the gold. You know, we had some guys from the partners meeting last night that, you know, after the first half an hour, they were up 30, 40 ticks doing stuff that we showed in the partners meeting last night. Now let me just show you over here on the NQ. I took one trade on the NQ this morning. It had this big run-up right at the open, but there was no way to get into it. I got into it over here once we had a pullback. I didn't draw the trend line, but I was eyeballing it. Right there, the up close right here is where I entered. It gave us a point profit, a little better than a point profit up here to the dynamic resistance, and then it came back down and took me out at break even. That was the only trade I placed on the NQ, but I mean, it was there. It was definitely there. Crude oil just gave another opportunity right here from that last one. If you got into this last trade over here, right there at 95.73, it's dropped all the way down to 95, let's just say 33. That's a $400 move right there. Okay, 73 down to 33, or a $390 move. And that happened while I was doing the recap. Pretty simple stuff. Let's see, over here, we had an up close right in here. That was another opportunity to get long for a couple of points. Then it got choppy. I pointed out a couple other spots in here as they were happening. That was good for about a point. This was good for about 3 points. And that brings us to where we are now. I didn't trade anything other than that one trade. I didn't do anything on the NQ. Okay? So that's pretty much it there. I didn't do anything on soybeans either. There was a soybean report due out right here. I'll show you. Right here. Look at 1201. All these bars. I'll blow the soybeans up. At 1201, all these bars between 1201 and 1202. There was a grain report due out. Now, earlier on, I had mentioned, or Cliff had actually pointed out to me, based on the stuff that we talked about last night, right here was an opportunity to short. If you go through and you look at everything from last night, you'll see that there were more opportunities in there, more opportunities to trade. You know, looking right over here, there was one right in there. And back over here, there was one right here to get short. Now there were plenty of opportunities to trade, but we were just leaving it alone this morning because we had that grain report coming out. So I didn't take any trades on the crude oil. I do want to just point out, I mean, I didn't take any trades on the soybeans. I took a bunch on the crude oil, sorry. I have crude oil on my brain because I was watching it out of the corner of my eye just dropping like this. Now the entry on that, as I said, was up here at 95.73. And it's now dropped all the way down to 95.27. That's 46 ticks. 46 ticks. And if you missed this first entry, there was another one right here. Right there that you could have taken. There's another one being created right at the moment. Okay. That's it. I'm going to stop with the crude oil for right now. All right, let's get over here to the ES. Now, on the ES, we had an opportunity in here on the ES right here. It was pretty early on in the morning, and I said, if you get in right here, I think it was, yeah, the up close right here was 975 is what I said. It should get right up to 511, and it did get right up to 511 right after I said that. There were a couple more opportunities in here that gave a point or so, you know, a little better than a point each time. Right now it's going down into the weekly trading zone, so I wouldn't recommend trading it right here. It's been pretty flat since it got up to the zone. It flattened out since it hit that magical 15-15 spot that that was forecast. But that's it on the ES. Now, we didn't trade the 6E, and we didn't trade the yen because it's Saturday in Asia right now. I think, right? 16 hours ahead, something like that. I know. I could have finished this up before the blizzard knocks my power out, right, Frank? here we go, right here, guys. On the natural gas, I believe it was at the end of the morning session that I had pointed out right here. A down close right here should get down here, and it did. And that gave us more opportunity. I also said once the green line gets down into the cycle, it should pull back and give more divergence and another opportunity to short. Okay? So you would be looking at the down close right here, all right, for the other opportunity to short. Then you lost your divergence in there. It's starting to get the divergence back again now, but I don't like the way that it's coming together here. All right, but there were a few opportunities in there this morning on the natural gas, particularly right at the end of the morning session. And I had said to everybody in there, and we had a whole bunch of people in the morning session this morning. Thanks to everyone who showed up for the morning session to check it all out. It all worked out. Okay, it worked out pretty well. I do want to say one thing about everything that we did in the morning session. If you became a partner and you got into the... You got into the workshops that we've done, that we have in the members area. You know, the workshops from, like, last night, the last month. There's a ton of stuff in there to help you transition into the learning process or tackle that learning curve. You know, what I did in the live trading room this morning, I think I've been told, by Frank anyway, I've been told, but I did slow it down quite a bit. And I did a lot of explaining, and we actually recorded almost all of it. So we, at some point, we'll have a link to that recording that we can put somewhere. I mean, it's still converting right now. It says it's still got 2 hours left to the conversion process. But I hope everybody got some sort of benefit from that this morning. All right. All right, so that's it. I'm going to wrap it up here. Hope you guys all have a great weekend. Hopefully we'll have power by the time we get back here on Monday, and everything should be good. We're not snowed in yet. There's a white cover on the ground right now, Gary, but it's all good. All right, that's it, guys. I'm gonna wrap up the recording. If anybody has any more questions, you can email them to us at support@cfrn.net. If you have questions about the charts, you know, about setting up the charting platform or DT Pro or anything like that, call 866-928-3310. Again, that's 866-928-3310. All right. If you have questions about any of the other stuff, about the setups, about, you know, what it takes to become a partner, about, you know, the cost, the options, anything like that, just send us an email at support@cfrn.net or call me on the phone number that I had put in there in this morning session. Okay, in the morning session. Send us an email at support@cfrn.net or call me on my cell phone. All right? That's it, guys. Going to wrap it. Done.
Okay, Michael, thanks very much. Hopefully your storm won't be too terribly bad, and you'll have some power, at least. But you're all prepared because you live there, so you're prepared, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, I have a generator.
That's how you live. You live prepared.
Snow thrower, all that stuff. Yep, I am prepared.
And hopefully you'll have electricity come Monday morning for the live trading room.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully.
For those of you who came out today for the product demo, if you have any questions, send an email to support@cfrn.net. It was great to see such a nice turnout. And I know that a lot of you, you know, you saw some indicators that maybe you haven't seen before. There was a number of things on the screen, but really there's two indicators involved. The upper part of the chart where the price action is, then the lower part of the chart, the slingshot is one indicator, and then what you saw on the top part of the chart is another indicator. And so really, you're looking at a four-tick range chart and two indicators, the slingshot and the indicator on top. And the only other thing involved is drawing a few trend lines. Now, it's work, okay? You show up every day and you have to work. Some days your work is done quickly. In other words, you come in, you have a setup in whichever market it is that you're trading, and we don't teach you to trade, you know, five different markets. Michael trades the different markets each day because we have 2 hours to work with. So we just take advantage of whichever trade setup, you know, presents itself in one of the markets that we're watching. So he's back and forth between markets. That might have concerned you, hey, I don't think I can learn how to trade all these different markets, or maybe I don't want to learn how to trade all these different markets. Well, that's fine. In fact, we recommend that what you do is you pick one, maybe two markets that you're familiar with, that you're comfortable with, or just because you need to be able to focus and concentrate, pick two, and that's what you're going to work with. Now, you're not really learning to trade a specific market. What you're learning to trade is a specific setup. Okay? Every one of the trades is taken in the same time frame, whether it's gold or crude or the Dow or the S&P or the Russell or the NASDAQ. It's all done in the same time frame, a four-tick range. It's the exact same setup, a 1-2-3-4 setup, four-step thing. Okay? When the setup presents itself, you take the trade, and after you take the trade, we teach you to use a bracketed order. Or actually, Michael leaves his target open on most of them, but there's always a hard stop, okay? Never risking more than 8 ticks. You put the trade on. Once you put the trade on, one of two things happens. Price either comes to your stop and you're out of the trade, or it moves in your favor. And then you aggressively manage the risk. And what does that mean, aggressively managing the risk? Well, as quickly as possible, we like to get the stop loss to plus 1 tick, to break even plus a tick. Now, the reason for the plus 1 tick is if, in fact, there's no follow-through, because these are momentum-type trades, if there's no follow-through, price comes back, stops you out. The fact that you've locked in 1 tick of profit in the trade while leaving yourself open to an endless amount of opportunity on the upside or the downside if you're in a short trade. When price comes back and does stop you out at plus 1 tick, okay, that 1 tick pays the commission on the trade. So you've had a free look at what amounts to a free look at the market, okay? So that's why we teach you aggressive risk management. That's why you'll see that again and again and again, that we get that stop as quickly as feasible. I mean, you can't do it. Once the trade goes 2 ticks in your favor, you can't move the stop to plus 1 tick. But once it's gone 5 or 6 ticks in your favor, you certainly can. And then you start making your decision as to where your exit is going to be. Now, if it starts to advance rapidly, then you can continue to just drag that stop right on up behind advancing price on a long trade or declining price on a short trade, locking in as much as you can. This is it's more like a factory job or an assembly line job than it is a glamour job, okay? And I'm just real upfront with you about that. This is work. It's a setup that gives you a definable edge in the market. What you have to do then is simply show up and apply the edge over and over and over as it presents itself in whatever market you've chose. You've made the decision, I'm going to trade the S&P and the Dow, or I'm going to trade gold and crude. Okay? You come in, you sit down at the assembly line, and you begin to, you know, grind it out. Follow the rules. You don't deviate. You don't get angry. You don't get upset. You don't throw things out the window. You don't start trading like the Mad Hatter. You don't try to get even. You don't try to get revenge. You don't start thinking about how you're going to beat the market, because the market's a lot bigger than you, and you're not going to beat the market. It's better that you have the market for a business partner, okay, as your associate. Work with the market. You know, if the market's climbing, we want to be long. If the market's declining, well, we want to be short. We don't want to fight the flow of the market. And those are the things that we'll teach you, that you'll learn. But it really comes down to three things. The password to get in today, for those of you that came, was focus. And in the email I sent you last night, I said what I really want you to do is to focus on those three things. And that is that we use the same time frame in every market. We use the two different indicators on every market. We draw a few trend lines. And that's it. Simply apply the edge over and over and over. Now, is there anyone that was in the live trading room this morning as part of the product demonstration who has not yet signed up for the free trial? Because even if you came this morning, you can still get a 5-day free trial. So if you need information on how to get signed up for the free trial, you can just type it into the box right here. Michael will get you the information right away. You can send an email to support@cfrn.net. Now, it's good to do on a Friday, because what happens is today you can go ahead and download the platform, get the indicators installed. You have the entire weekend to kind of get familiar with the platform. You know, look at some different charts, some different markets, some different time frames. You know, apply the indicators to those different markets. And then Monday morning when the live trading room opens up, you're ready to just follow right along. Okay, so we're not just letting you come hang out in the trading room for 5 days. We're encouraging you, we're asking you, if you're going to come to the free trial, download the platform, use the indicators, because you won't understand the power of what you've got in front of you unless you actually put it to use. Okay, there's a simulator you can put on, take off trades, just like Michael's doing. Okay, you have to get familiar with the mechanics of a system before you can start fine-tuning the finer points. So, roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty, and learn how to trade. If at the end of a week you decide you don't want to become a partner because it's not for you, I promise you, you will have learned some very valuable things during that week that you'll take with you all the rest of your trading days. We share pearls of wisdom each and every day. And it's not just Michael and I sharing them. Bert is in there, and we have partners who share pearls of wisdom every day. So come be a part of it. CFRN.net/apply. We're going to pause for a station identification, head right on out to Las Vegas, Nevada, talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. Reminder, 3 p.m. Eastern today, Coach's Corner with Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach. Hope to see you there.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone, and good morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, David.
That's the song I sing to the markets every day.
Is it?
Even if they cause me grief, I still love them.
It's still a beautiful day in David's world.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So, anyway, we do have some cold weather here. I don't know if Robin's with us here today, but
nope, she's
it's
not.
It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas.
She'll be here at 3 o'clock Eastern for the Coach's Corner.
Okay. It is a beautiful day here in Las Vegas, but it's very cold. So I'm sure you have some cooler weather. I think you might have some cooler weather over there as well, Dwayne.
No, it's pretty nice here. It's about 60s. I think it's going to be a high of 65 today, something like that.
Oh, okay. We got into the low 40s or high 30s today.
This weekend we've got some cold weather coming up in northern Arizona, and it'll be a little cooler here, but we aren't looking for anything severe.
Yeah. Well, good. Any news of importance that you haven't covered already?
No, we talked about the storm. We talked about the Apple iWatch. We talked about AOL still makes most of their money from people who pay for dial-up internet.
And, can you believe that? I mean, isn't that something that you would have predicted, say, 10 years ago would not even, you know, who could imagine that that still is happening, that people are dialing up to get on the internet? That really is a surprise to me.
$500 million a year. Now, someone in the chat room pointed out that they have moved into a lot of emerging markets, and although broadband and high-speed internet via cable is, you know, prevalent here in the U.S., in urban areas, there may be lots of areas in developing nations where that is not the case yet, and so a lot of that revenue, I didn't see the numbers broken down on a geographical basis, but I bet there's some merit to what that person in the chat room said, that like places in, you know, Mexico, maybe even mm-hmm. the UK.
Oh yeah, I'm not even addressing India. Outside of the United States. I at first thought we were talking about AOL in the U.S.
No, we're talking about AOL as a company, that they still make the bulk of their revenue from dial-up internet.
Yeah. Outside of the country, certainly. We know there's areas where they don't have internet.
What comes from the U.S., I don't know. I'll take a look at that article again. In fact, I'll go look at their financials later and see if they do break it out.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised about is, you know, the United States of America. I know there's still areas here that are very rural, and they use the satellite connection that you see on TV, which with them talking about HughesNet or whatever it's called. But dial-up, you know, that's the number two pencil of the internet, you know.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Good analogy.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I can't imagine that that would be still running here in America. Maybe, there's got to be some place it probably is, but that's why I always thought it would be great to have a cell phone with a rotary dial on it. You know, one part of your technology goes way back and the other one is real high tech. They probably have that somewhere.
You can buy what looks like an ordinary phone to plug into your iPhone so that you can, you know, why you'd want to, I don't know, but you can sit there and hold a big receiver.
Just for fun, Dwayne.
Up to your head. Yeah. I guess that's what it is. Just for fun.
Yeah. Just for fun. Just for gosh darn fun to be sitting in a restaurant at a counter eating a breakfast and have to pull out a whole phone to answer it, something like that, with a big rotary dial on it. That's me. I would do that. Seriously, I would do that. I'd love to do that. I've done some silly things in my time.
You rebel, you.
I know. I really have. I've done some silly things. But none sillier than perhaps trying to trade these markets. No, I'm just joking. It was a silly thing at first because, you know, you do silly things and you just, you know, you keep making the same mistakes over and over again. That's the funny thing is that, you know, there's a lot of truths in the market. One of them is that people tend to make the same mistakes over and over again, and they, instead of changing their behavior, they change something else, but they don't change their behavior. They tend to stay the same, but they change what they call what's happening to them. They change what they name it. But changing behavior is a tough one for people. And it was for me, and I'm sure it was for, or is for many people, but the markets really show that that is a, for me, is a truth, that it's difficult to change your behavior. It takes a, it's a big ship that has to be turned around, because we get, we're so, you know, people are mechanical, you know. If you go to a meeting with people, let's say you, I don't know, you know, let's say you're in some kind of a, or you work somewhere and you've worked there for many years, isn't it true that you know almost exactly what that person is going to say or do under a set of conditions? Maybe you go to your same hairdresser for 15 years if you're a woman, or you, maybe you go to this a place where you are donating time and the same people are there. And isn't it funny that people are, you know exactly what a person's going to do, how they're going to move, how they're going to, and this isn't a critical thing, this is just an observation. And you can really, it's easier to see, obviously, in other people than it is for yourself. And we do need mechanical things, you know, the movement of our body, the way that we balance and walk and all those things. There's nothing wrong with that. But psychologically, it's very easy to see when you're looking at others anyway. It's not so easy to see in ourselves that other people are very predictable in their behavior and how they're going to respond to something. And especially if you work with people, you see them do the same things every day over and over again. And we're talking about psychological things, how they respond to a question or to a criticism or to something. And it's always the same. So yeah, changing behavior is difficult. And so in the markets, we find out that sometimes when something doesn't work, we don't change our behavior. We change how we think about it. We change what we call it, but oftentimes we don't actually change the behavior. And so maybe that's some, that's an area that you can look at and say, you know, I should just change what I'm doing here rather than doing anything else, renaming it or whatever. Because a lot of times when things don't work in the market, that for some reason there's a force that it's in us that wants to fight that and then go somehow win the battle between you and the market, or you and this particular thing that's happening, and we want to come out on top. And it's much, much better to try to understand what the market actually wants to do or is doing in reality and trade in direction of it. Dwayne had mentioned something like that a little earlier. And kind of go along with what the market's doing. Even in our methodology, Reflected Wave, where we're calling turning points, we, under many conditions, will wait for some kind of confirmation to get into that move. And there are some conditions where we take the turn just directly as it is, but those are a little bit more aggressive, and it's sometimes they're normal trades because the market has other confirmations that's happening in coincidence with the turning point itself. But what I'm saying is that you know, there's usually plenty of room left for a move to occur, or often there is, and you can just wait for the market to show what its intentions are, and then start trading along with it in that direction. Now, if you're trading on 1 minute and 5 minute charts, you know, you're going to have to be pretty quick and all that to do this, and that's part of what intraday trading requires of you. But each level that you're at in trading, every kind of trading, every style of trading requires something from you. You know, the trend followers have to live with a whole bunch of failed starts of trends. The guy that's trading very short term has to be quick on his feet. The guy that's trading longer term trades has to sit with overnight positions and maybe doesn't sleep as well and has to learn to do that. So we all have our, you know, it, you know, they all, every style has its own list of pluses and minuses. So anyway, just funny thing about human behavior, it's very difficult to change human behavior. And even when punished, it's very, punished could mean by the law, or punished could mean, because even by the law, even when you're punished by the law and you have to pay the ticket, you still want to run your car down the street just as fast as you did last time. Your behavior still wants to happen, but you've been shown that you're going to have to pay money if you do that, and you don't want that to happen, or you don't want to have to be pulled over and written another ticket. And so that other force has to come in and stop us. We're actually, it's very difficult for people on their own to actually change their own behavior. They have to be forced, usually. And although Robin Dane isn't here, you know, this is one of the reasons why it sometimes is really good to have somebody else to help you change your own behavior. Because behavior, we tell ourselves, work in command of our lives, but our behaviors begin and start moving before we're even thinking. We're already into the behavior, although we might tell ourselves that we're in the command of the ship. But isn't it funny? You're in command of the ship, but you're doing the exact same things all the time. And even when punished, it's difficult to change that behavior. People that even go to jail have trouble changing their behavior. They get out of jail, and in many, 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 many cases, they go right back to doing what they were doing before they went in the jail. They can't change their own behavior. So I don't mean this to be a big thing about necessarily going and utilizing a coach, but it can be an additional aid to help you make changes in your behavior. It would be a good idea for you to see that it's difficult to change your own behavior. And if you've seen that for yourself, then you might want to have somebody give you some help with that. So whoever that is, Robin Dane, you know, we happen to know her, and she's on the program, and she's very good at what she does. But whoever and wherever you get that help, no matter what you tell yourself, the fact is that your own behavior can get you into trouble, and you'll find yourself doing that same behavior again. Even though you also tell yourself you're in control of your life and you're the master of your own ship, the fact is that your behavior happens in front of you prior to you stepping up and taking credit or not for it. It's already in motion. It already gets ahead of you, your behavior. So that's one of the reasons it's so difficult to stop, is because it happens on its own, and it's difficult to change. So that's my presentation, is that, you know, you might want to take a look at behavior and start working on trying to make some changes so you can start working through the difficulty, which doesn't have to be that difficult. Half of the difficulty is that we believe we're little mini gods and that we're in control of our own lives. And in many, many cases, it can be shown very clearly that behavior that has been conditioned into us is what's in control. You go do something and you say yes when you should say no, and it gets you in trouble in some way, and you say, boy, I'm never going to do that again. Someone else asks you to do something, and there you are again, before you even get a chance to think about it, saying yes again. You know, I think a lot of people believe that saying yes is spiritual and saying no isn't. I have great news for you. Saying no is more spiritual than saying yes in many cases. So just making other people happy by you giving them something they ask for isn't spiritual. Isn't spiritual. Because you may be giving them something that hurts them or that lets them get their way when they really shouldn't, and so on. And so, but we tell ourselves, you know, one of the great things about human psychology is that it ducks, dodges, and weaves every minute it can to not see itself. It's a house of mirrors. And so you'll find yourself in positions where you find yourself telling yourself that you're doing something for someone else. Somebody asks you a favor to go do something. Hey, man, you know, could you help me move? Or, you know, we got like this new couch. Could you just stop everything you're doing and come on over? And, you know, it's like a 300-pound couch, and, you know, my other good friends are around. Can you come down? I only live about 14 miles from you, so can you just come on over and, you know, and could you do it at my convenience? You know, it's around 7 tonight, you know, when you'd normally be at home watching TV or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And you say yes, and even though you'd like to say no, the behavior steps up first and says yes. And there you are. Your behavior is proceeding. It's very difficult to change the behavior. And before you know it, you're telling yourself that you're a good person or that you're spiritual because you're helping people, when the truth of the matter is you can't stop yourself from doing it. You can't take any credit for it. You can't stop yourself. That's the truth. Behavior is in charge, not you. And so we see this a lot in markets and the way people behave in markets. I've seen it in myself. I am just as much in the same boat as everybody else, so I'm not speaking down to people, but I am speaking forcefully about it in some ways because I've seen it for myself, and I've seen myself walk down that same path. So ask yourself, check it out, when somebody asks you a favor or you get yourself in some kind of a position where you've done this kind of thing before, check out how difficult it would be to do the opposite of what you find yourself starting to do already, because behavior is taking command of you. And then if you do it, catch yourself telling yourself the story the cover story that you're a wonderful person because you did that, when in reality, you're weak. You're not in control of your own responses, and you found yourself again saying something to somebody like yes, or I can drive the 14 miles, when you could simply say, you know what, I won't really be available, you know, I appreciate you asking, but I really can't do that tonight. Thanks for asking, and maybe another time. Just like that. And just let it go and let the stuff fall. If that, and then there's other people, by the way, who always say no, and those people need to learn to say yes. So it depends on what it is, because their habit, their behavior is always to say no. Everything you ask of them, nope, can't do that, nope, can't do that, whatever it is. And that person, his behavior is ahead of him. He's saying no when in actuality maybe he should say yes. So it's individual. It's with each person. My problem in my past has been saying yes. That's why I'm forceful about that particular subject, because I lived through it. I've been through that, and I think many people have, where you want to be nice, but there's another part of you that doesn't know how to do it the other way. You're 50 years old and you haven't yet learned how, you meaning anybody, myself included, you haven't learned how to say what you really want rather than what others want. And I want to tell one quick little story. It doesn't directly connect with this, but it's a story from a man named Vernon Howard. Told me this story, told the class, a group of people, this story many, many years ago. There was a king, and the king wanted to have a new castle built. And so the king ordered his minister to get all the builders in the land to come out and bring their plans and their ideas for the king's new castle. So the minister did so, and the minister sat in the big office, and one by one he brought the people in as they waited out there, and the people would lay out their plans and say, well, here's what I think, you know, here's where we'll have the moat, if there's a moat or whatever, here's where the castle is, here's where the doors would be, and so on. Thank you very much, you know, next person comes in. And for a period of 3 days, all these people from across the land came to the king's minister to display their plans for the king's new castle. And finally, at the third day, at the end of all this, the final last guy was there. And the minister said, well, there's nobody else here but you. Why don't you come forward? And he says, what are your plans for the king's castle? And the man said, well, I didn't bring any plans, actually, but I can follow instructions. That's the story. That's the story. What does the king want? How would the king like his castle? What does he want? Everyone was coming to the room telling how they were going to build it for the king. What does the king want? Nobody bothered to ask what the king's desires were. And he did. And I'll just leave you with that story because it has a lot of connections to many parts of our lives. But that's what the last guy said. No, I don't have any plans at all, but I can follow instructions. What would the king like?
That's
there you are. You like that?
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to... Let's get on to...
I did some research here, and despite the power of the Internet, and we know it's very powerful, I cannot find any evidence of AOL dial-up service being available in other countries. Has anyone out there, perhaps out of curiosity, since we brought this up, checked to see... Because I got to thinking about the very name of the company, America Online.
Yeah, online.
So, I mean, I've tried all different search queries, like I want to sign up for AOL dial-up in Mexico or India or different places. And I don't find, but I also don't find any place where it says AOL dial-up service is only available in America. So what I have found is that, you know, comments like, unbelievably, there are still 3 million people subscribed to America Online's dial-up service, generating a third of the company's revenue and most all of its profit. Let's see. What else did I find that was... So who uses AOL? Some people have retained it because of the email address. Some feel trapped. Some enjoy the AOL radio.
Some enjoy that sound, that little sound when you hook up on. That was always a neat sound. Was that Bert?
It sounded like one of his little...
Yeah, that was good, David.
You like that? Yeah, that was good. You know, I practiced that all night. I just was waiting for that. I was waiting for an opportunity to do that.
Oh, that was good. All right, I'll go back in my hole now.
Oh, that's good.
You woke me up.
All right. So, Dwayne, what you're saying is that there may actually be millions of people in the United States still using dial-up AOL.
Yeah, it sounds something like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's something very nostalgic about that. If you were an early adopter of, you know, the Internet, that was, you know, there's something almost comforting and warm and cozy.
Almost cozy. Almost cozy.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I've got all these different articles from all these different really smart people, and see, here's their revenue, membership, AOL, in millions. All the numbers, but it just doesn't say what countries they're dialing up from. So since I can't find anything contrary to that, I'm going to just guess that those 3 million people are here in the U.S.
Yeah, and that is amazing to me. I would have bet at this point that if there were any left, that AOL would have had to switch over to being some other kind of provider, you know, with ordinary broadband or whatever. That is a surprise to me, and it doesn't surprise me that there's some people that still need dial-up. Certainly there's areas that don't have that the satellite, you know, is what you might use, or you might use dial-up. But I'm surprised there's that many people left on dial-up. I mean, wow.
Well, you know, part of it has to do, like one of the articles here says that you can get AOL dial-up for as little as $10 a month. And so... For people on fixed incomes or people who just use
it. Like Harry Reid? Harry Reid's on a fixed income.
Yeah, for people who just use it, too.
He said he was. He said he's on fixed income.
I believe him.
I know.
Who just use it to check email, you know, or headlines. They don't. Now, that $10 a month package, I think you're only allowed a certain number of hours that you can be connected. But if you.
Well, it takes about an hour to get connected, so that's 1 hour. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, so for budgetary concerns and people who have limited use of the Internet, I mean, with a cell phone, you can't really get a $10 data package. And if you want to get it through your cable company, I think the cheapest I've seen is like through Quest. Maybe you can get a $19.95 thing. So that may be part of the reason there, the fact that you can hook up to the Internet for as little as 10 bucks a month. I don't know how many hours you get. Layla says, who's in the UK, she says that AOL broadband is available in the UK. Not sure if dial-up is available. Now, Layla, when you say AOL broadband, how is that delivered to your home? Does it come over a telephone line? Does it come over a cable line? How do you get that? How do you get the broadband? Alan says that his aunt in Chicago, who's 70, uses AOL exactly for that reason, because of the affordability.
Okay.
So, Layla, when you have a chance, if you can type in how the broadband works there. And Dwayne G. asks, do they include DSL as dial-up? I would think so. But again, I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting.
I'm quite surprised that they're even still in business, because, I mean, that was their core business, the dial-up service. They introduced America to the Internet, and I'm sure you remember, David, for a while there in the late 90s, everywhere you went was one of those little discs. It was in your mailbox.
Right.
It was in the glove box of your car. It was on the counter at the convenience store. They were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you even wondered, because compact discs were relatively new then, and you're like, wow, how can this company afford to print up all of these CDs? And, you know, but here we are all these years later, and that's probably one of the most successful marketing campaigns ever.
Mm-hmm.
Got all these people online, and they're still online.
Yeah, no, that is amazing. I'm surprised. It is funny because you do tend to think that everybody's on the internet, and there's millions of people that are not on the internet at all, and that everybody has a cell phone, and you know we're around. We live, you know, in whatever cities we live in, but there are places, and it is becoming more obvious now with this discussion that there's quite a few places where the dial-up is still there, like the fellow said, just for budgetary reasons. They don't want to spend $50, $60, whatever it is. I don't even know what it costs now to be, you know, what's the minimum that you can pay to have high-speed cable. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's relatively reasonable, but there are people who don't want to spend it or are on some kind of a fixed income, like Harry Reid, that might just have, you know, the dial-up just to keep his expenses capped. Because he was on TV once saying, well, you know, he was just on a fixed income. You know, this is a guy who, never mind, don't get me started. I just was in the mood to slap him around a little bit.
Okay, now the cheapest plan they offer is $6.99 a month. That includes 5 hours of backup dial-up service. I don't know what that means by backup dial-up.
Maybe for $6.99 you get to go on the internet and see what happened yesterday.
Maybe. Their premier plan is $25.90. And I'm going to guess you get unlimited.
Fast, yeah, but that has to be inching in on what cable companies charge for high speed.
No, high speed internet. Really? If you want truly high speed internet here in Phoenix through Cox Cable, I think it's about $80.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was that expensive.
If you go for the tier with the power boost and the whole, you know, yeah, it's about $80.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if you have it bundled with other features like digital phone and, you know, cable TV. It's not cheap. But everyone, you know, it's a cost. It's not a cost of doing business. It's just a cost of living in America for most people. And, So anyway, all right, let's move on to the markets.
Well, good. Now, that was an interesting story. I hadn't even thought about AOL for actually quite some time, and I think the last time I thought about them, I was thinking, well, they're going to go away unless they transition into something more like broadband. And so, and they are outside of the United States because Layla, we know she's a good source for information. She's out there in the UK, and she says that she has AOL out there. So it's just AOL, it's just that you're not in America. It should be called EOL, where she is. That's for England Online. Maybe that's what it's called out there. Okay, well, you want to move on to the markets, Dwayne?
Sure.
We'll do that.
Let's do it.
Okay, so with regard to, if we want, let's get started with the S&P. This is the market we start with almost every day. You know, the one thing that's great about today is it now means that I won't have to say what I've been saying for so long over and over again about 1515 and the S&P being a target and so on, and that we would be heading higher to touch that. We have completed that today, and we think it's meaningful, of course, that they've completed it. We think it was necessary for them to complete it, and we thought for quite some time that many of the indicators that people use on a longer term basis would give false signals until we reached at least 1515 on the upside. So today we have touched 1515. They're reacting off of it right now. There are two, or actually one real level above that that's of importance. There's going to be some minor levels above this as well that are tradable intraday, and we don't have to go into them right now. They'll be in our support and resistance panel. Dwayne will have his levels that he gives out as well. But for us, the bigger levels that are important after 1515 are 1538 and 1540. Those levels, I would actually prefer to see those levels be at least tested or attempted prior to the ending. Only the preference is only based on the idea that it would be easier for me to act somewhat more aggressively at better prices up there than it would necessarily at 1515. But now that we've completed this, even if we do exceed it during the month of February, I think it's very important to see how February reacts at the end of February. How do we close in regard to 1515 is going to be even more important. So they've done it, they've completed it, and we have a quiet, really a very quiet market today other than the move up, a very quiet market reacting off of it here. And it may be quiet like this until we get through to near the end of the day. They may not really show their hand much here until the end of the day. And then next week, I don't remember what holiday it is, but and Dwayne, maybe you have your calendar there.
But
President's Day is on the following Monday, or is it on Friday? I'm sorry, I don't have my.
It's on the 20th, I think.
Let's take a look. I think it's on Monday, but I'm not sure.
Yes, it's definitely a Monday.
It is definitely Monday. Okay, so that means that the Monday. That means that Friday, the 15th. Is likely going to be a very quiet session. We're now talking about Friday next week. The 15th is probably going to be a very quiet session because most people and traders are probably going to take a four-day or three or four-day holiday there. You know, you're going to have potentially Friday off for travel, and then you've got your 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and then back maybe on late Monday, something like that. So I don't know what your schedule is, but I did want to – I'm just bringing this up now because I wanted to remind everyone of that, and also that I don't know what your schedule is, Dwayne. There's a possibility that we may not be in on Friday just because the markets may be slow. Now, we're going to judge it day by day because we would prefer to be here. But if the market is going to be very slow, if it's really, really quiet going into that like on Thursday – likely that we won't be here on Friday and we will return on Tuesday. And so just keep that in mind. And then I don't know if you've mentioned your schedule yet, Dwayne, or not.
No, we hadn't really discussed it. I mean, we'll definitely be here Friday. It's President's Day. It's not like a major holiday. I mean, it's popular.
But aren't I think the markets are closed, though.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Or half day on some of them.
Well, the futures market is – well, we'll just find out. We'll
yeah.
turn to our friend, AOL. President's Day schedule for Stock Exchange. Let's see what we get. Stock market holidays.
I think the Chicago Flight Trading Floor is closed on that day, and that's why it
President's
is actually a
day,
bit of a more important holiday.
February 18th, 2013.
I'm on the radio. Yeah. Trading floor is closed.
Is the CME open? This is the New York Stock Exchange. Let's go to the CME calendar.
Yeah, that's the CME calendar is what we're looking at.
CME. Leslie always sends me a calendar, and then I don't have it handy when... CME Group Holiday Calendar. Here we go. 2013. So it's going to open Sunday night, I assume, for the normal Globex session, and then it will close. Let's go down and find February. Let's go to President's Day. Martin Luther King. That's not the day we want. Why is it only giving me January? Okay, here we go. President's Day. President's Day. Okay, February the 15th, Friday, we get a regular close for the CME. Is that what we want? They never make these things simple or easy to understand. They could just say open or closed, but here we'll look here. Sunday it's going to open for regular trade. It will be for Tuesday's trade day. And then Monday, February 18th, 6:15 Central, regular open. Half trading will halt at 10:30 Central time.
Okay.
So that's 11:30. So on Monday, trading will halt at 11:30 Eastern. So it'll open Sunday afternoon, and then it'll trade right on up until 11:30 Eastern, at which point it will close, and then it will reopen for the Tuesday session.
Yeah, the normal everyday Tuesday session.
At 5 p.m. Central Time. Yeah, so it'll be closed a total of, what, 6 hours? Yeah, it's a six-hour holiday. That's what it amounts to.
Okay. Yeah, but what it really amounts to is that a lot of people won't be there for a half day, and it'll probably be a very, very quiet day. And we'll judge it as we
We'll probably take the Monday off, the President's Day. We'll take that off most likely, but I doubt we'll take Friday off.
Yeah. Okay, well, good. And we're going to judge it up to not the Monday, but the Friday preceding. Since we do trade throughout the whole day in our Messenger Pro product, I don't like to tie people up for really, really slow. If it's obvious it's going to be really slow, we try not to do that. Okay, so let's see. Let's finish up on the S&P. We'll run through the markets quickly here. I don't have a whole lot else to add for the S&P. I'm glad to see the longer-term stuff get completed here at 1515. I think it's necessary. This is a number that will be a kind of a defining level in our work now that they've completed it. I think that indicators that may not have worked well during this large run-up that we've had that we're calling, you know, people have complained that, hey, it's saying go short, and it doesn't. That's because they want to finish these levels, and they tend to want to do that under conditions that are often similar to what we've seen, where we have these creeping markets. Because we talked about don't sell a creeping market and all that. And that's just a general rule. It's not something that you can necessarily directly trade off of. But as a background thing, we've had quite a bit of creeping market all the way starting back on January 3rd. But it has done a lot of work, so to speak. Work meaning moving through price levels, testing and responding, and continuing higher. Certainly the run from, if you're looking at daily charts, the run from January 15th's bottom, all the way up to maybe January 30th, that was a very slow, quiet, grinding, creeping market day after day after day after day, which indicates a much larger force keeping the market propped up. And that force, we felt, would take the market to the 15 and so on. So the next step for us is to watch how they handle this. We do expect the normal test and reaction off of it. One thing I would say, that although the high is right at 1515, under normal conditions, they should be able to spike. Even if they're going to fail at 15, we should be able to get a spike through and above that, and not just necessarily stop right at the number. If they do, if they were to continue and fail right at this number, especially later in the month when we close the month of February, if we were below it, having only touched 1515, I would be forced to infer that there was greater selling pressure than normal at that level, and that the larger move that we're forecasting on the downside would be, in a sense, already underway. So we'll watch and see how they play out with this. So I don't have anything else to add to it. It's very, very quiet intraday here. You know, this is we've seen plenty of this, and there's nothing new to add to that. But at least now I don't have to keep saying every day on your radio program what I've been saying. You know, well, we think the market's going to go higher.
That was a nice, very nice call to 1515. That was beautiful. I think it went. Did it go to the tick, or did it miss it by one tick? No, it didn't.
On the S&P March, they're right there.
Yep.
They hit it.
They hit it to the
They
tip.
Just hit it, and they did. They smacked it right into it there. And I, like I said, we're going to watch and thank you, Dwayne. We're gonna watch it and see if we can if the market can spike it, because normally I would expect under normal conditions a spike of that level, if not a full exceeding of it. But this turns the tumbler, like we've talked about, into the next set of conditions, which is, this is the early warning now. You've been, you know, quote unquote, you've been warned. You know, this is the beginning of the final phase now of the advance off of the 09 bottom, at least in our way of looking at things. And therefore, I don't have a problem if they get above this level. There are other important levels above. There's both minor and major. And again, 1538 to 40 is a big one for us. From it's quite a distance from where we are right now, a decent distance. But the fact is I'm going to let them show me here a little bit about what they're able to do with 1515. So we'll see how the day gets handled, and then we'll be back. All of us will be back on Monday, and we can take it from there. So let's move on. Let's go through our usual group of markets. There's been some movement in a couple of these markets that I think are important. Moving over to gold, which today is having a down day, not big, but a down day. One of the things that I think is important to keep in mind from our perspective in gold is that continued daily closes above 1660, we think, are going to be keeping the market on the bullish side. And all that means is that indications that we get, we're going to tend to take bullish indications. We're interested in taking bullish indications. And one such indication would be to take a breakout type of trade above 1687, let's say. Now, that's quite a bit higher than where we are. We're 1667. But don't let that scare you. If that were to happen next week, or maybe it does scare you, but for us, it doesn't scare us. We would take that trade if they did break out. There's a whole body of work in trading, a whole body of trading method that treats the idea of trading breakouts. And breakouts, you know, there could be a number of ways of what you call a breakout. So let's just use the usual.
The whole IBD thing, the Investor's Business Daily, their whole thing is about trading breakouts.
Yeah. So the breakout thing, you know, markets get above an important previous high, and that is, it means that likely, the market's likely in that world, that kind of way of looking at it, to go higher, or breaks out to the downside. What I like to do with the idea of a breakout is I don't necessarily need to see a breakout always above a direct final high of something. Breakouts off of smaller levels can be important as well, but I like to tie it in with important numbers that would ordinarily need to be touched during a particular time period. So as an example, in gold, I won't give you the number now, and I'm sorry, but at least you can take the trade either way, and I can give you some help with that. The idea is that if we were to, we're down below it now, but if we were to break out above 87, 88 next week, I have no problem with anybody being long in that with that type of positioning. So keep that in mind, and we'll talk about it if that happens. As it is right now, there would be no trade, but also as it is right now, we're above 60, 1660. I believe we're going to close the day above 1660, and we're at 1667 right now, and it is a down day, but we'll talk about this more next week. But that's one of the outlooks that we have on gold, and as we get into next week, I've threatened to say we're going to put out a roadmap for this, but we're waiting. We're just being comfortable waiting because the market has been quiet, and we're going to wait for a little more confirmation before we do a roadmap on gold. But it would be worth your while to know this particular roadmap as well, because this is one that has quite a bit of indications putting, you know, together. You know, a bunch of stuff is coming together here for this. So
Richard has asked, did you say 1667 or 1687?
I said 1687, and I know that's quite a bit higher than we are right now.
Okay.
So don't let that worry you, because you don't have to take any action right now. And like I said, the market staying above 1660 is still it leaves the market on the bullish side for us coming into next week. So, there's no actions needed here. Just keep an eye on it. And we love the gold market. It's been a fabulous market, and I think there's some important moves that are about to occur in gold, and we're going to try to give them to our subscribers in the form of a roadmap. We're going to try to trade them ourselves. We actually are trend following a move that has started that was back. We got in, believe it or not, 2009. It's now 2013. We are inching in incredibly on our fourth year. I mean, is that right? Yeah. We're inching in on our fourth year in a position that we've shown the statement for a number of times in our webinars, and we will show one on Tuesday. I do want to tell people also that yesterday we had a webinar that we weren't able to do. Bert Schlichter couldn't make it because he had an issue that had come up. We had a technical glitch simultaneously with our email and another server that we have here, and so we weren't able to do it. And for those of you that tried to go there, I do apologize for that, because that's not normally what happens. But, you know, it's real life, and we had to deal with it. And so now our next webinar will be next Tuesday. And if I can, and I think I will, I'm going to get our gold statement, our current gold statement together, and along with our current option statement, I want to show you where we are. It's probably roughly the same as it was, you know, several months ago, because gold has been going sideways. But this is a position we started in 09 based off of a big reflected wave bottom that had been put into the market. And we had tried to get in the market many, many times over 8 years. I mean, it's incredible to think back that from the 2000 low all the way up, we tried to get in the market on the long side in a way that was that fit our methodology, and we just weren't able to do it. Finally, in 09, they had a big pullback, and we were able to get in on that one, and that position we're still in to this day. It's almost as mind-boggling to me because we've never held a position that long. So it's pretty remarkable, and we're as gold sits right now, we believe that there's a possibility for a very important bottom having been put in here and substantially higher prices. So as that occurs, though, I have to tell you, this is just my personal thing, I'm going to be interested in starting to remove at a faster rate some of the positions that we have in gold. These are not the metal. We're not buying the metal itself. We're actually in ETFs type of trading. So, you know, the ones that, you know, they're supposed to go out and buy gold with, or, you know, if you cash them in, you know, it usually works. But like Duane says, the time's going to come where it may not work. But for all intents and purposes, you know, it'll be fine. So anyway, we're hoping to see that, and I'll show that to you on this is our attempt to be trend followers, because even though there's a really important high that's been put in gold, you know, there's not a whole lot of real good certainty yet about everything in the economy. Gold does try to look ahead, and it has held some important levels here. So any advance that comes could be pretty impressive. We may not take out the highs. We may not see, you know, there's all kinds of gold bugs talking about. What are the numbers on the upside, Duane? 5,000, 7,000, 10,000? What's
gold,
the big number now?
For gold, you mean?
Yeah, you know, the things that are on the internet where people...
Oh, gosh, yeah, 5,000. I mean, you know, yeah. You can, if you look hard enough, you don't actually don't have to look too hard. You can find 25,000.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd like to meet that guy and shake his hand. just, I mean, that's the beauty of the internet, though, and it really is. It is a beauty. You can say anything you want. So, anyway, commodities do make big, big moves, and sometimes, and quite often, they surprise people with what they've been able to do. Gold did a remarkable thing by moving and doubling its old high of 900, getting up to 1,800, 1,900, 2,000, whatever it got to. And either way, we think there's an important move coming in gold, so keep that in mind. And on next Tuesday, we'll have a webinar. We'll talk about it on Monday. If you have an interest, you can come, and we'll show what we've done with the gold market. And then let's move on from there. Let's see. Normally from here, we run over to the U.S. Treasury bond market. Okay. We're calling for a monthly bottom. In February, we've been calling for a monthly bottom in February. We're not even halfway through February yet, but February did, in the month of February, we made a low February 4th at 142.05. The reason this is important to us is because if we're correct, if the methodology is correct, and we have a monthly bottom, by the way, this is a reflected wave bottom, if it is correct, we are then going to see a decent advance up, and we think the interest rates will stay low all the way through August or September, and for all intents and purposes, therefore, the rest of the year. So remember, the government said they were going to do this all the way out to 2015, and then they backed off that, unless I'm mistaken, and they backed it off to the 2014. That's talking about buying U.S. Treasury bonds to keep the interest rates low. And I'm of the belief, and I've said this before, that the economy actually is not going to be served well by continuing to keep interest rates low, that the economy will actually get better if market forces are left to operate the way they normally do. Because one wheel greases another one, and that greases another one. And with the interest rates this low, it doesn't promote that type of interest and activity in banks for loaning. It doesn't in many, many ways. I mean, I could go through the whole thing with from credit cards to retailers to everything. Having higher interest rates actually, I believe, will spur the economy. And so in a way, the government is perhaps blocking the growth of the economy without necessarily wanting to by keeping the interest rates kind of artificially low if you believe in the ability for the government to keep interest rates low by buying U.S. Treasury bonds. That's one factor in the whole thing. But none of us really want high interest rates, but I think we need higher interest rates in order to spur the economy on. I think it spurs investment. I think it spurs all kinds of things. So, one wheel greasing another. But we won't see that this year. So if I was going to make an economic forecast for the year 2013, it's going to be pretty much not so good with regard to the overall economy because of interest rates remaining low. It's a bigger, you know, it's obviously bigger than just interest rates, but interest rates is one of the big key factors, I believe, in how the economy operates. So take advantage of it while it's here, though. You know, low housing prices, low interest rates, all the stuff we've talked about so many times. So February bottom we're looking for in the euro. And for those of you with reflected wave, not the euro, the U.S. Treasury bond, sorry. With regard to the euro, let's move over to the euro, the currency, the euro, not the pair, but just the straight-up futures currency for the euro. We had forecast a February top, and in our institutional work for the institutional people, that top, which was up in the 136 and 137 range, we had forecast would go down to 133.85, and they reached that yesterday. Although we do have a reflected wave bottom or a bottom that's due for a bounce, if that does occur, I'm still looking for lower prices next week or the week after. So in other words, any bounce that comes from this, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable buying the bounce, to be honest. I think I'd be more comfortable selling rallies for further decline next week. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about that next week as well. But our initial target, this move down to 133.85, that like 400 pip move, that's only the initial target. They've completed that. We're trading at 133.69, just a little bit below that, 133.70 right now. And again, if we do get a bounce, I like the idea of selling at important reflected wave tops for continued decline, continued weakness into next week, certainly into next week. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it. How are you doing? All right? I think when I say all that together, that means I really believe that. So that's just my way of saying it. All right. Let's see if there's anything else. I'm just work with me here. I get excited about something. Let's see. The crude oil market. This is interesting because there's a lot of connectivity between crude and a number of other markets. And we had a forecast for a bottom in crude on February 5th, plus or minus a day. It came in on the 6th as a bottom. But we do have a much larger move in crude that we believe crude is going to head lower. And we do have a roadmap out for this. And if you want to get it, you can come to pagetrader.com, sign up for a month, and go check out the roadmap for crude. People who were on the long side of crude for this big run-up, that was the first stage of this roadmap. And that was called from roughly 85 up to 95. They finally got up to 98 and have reversed here. But we're very, very interested now in how crude acts, because from this point forward, we even have a shorter term thing that we're going to put out to our subscribers about next week and crude, about where we think it's going to be next week. So that's something that if you have an interest in the crude oil markets, the energy markets, you might want to check out what we're talking about with that. It is on the short side, so I want to give that to people here, but I want people to be careful with it. And some of our traders, some of the people that we know and that trade in the markets, and some of these people are very aggressive, very skilled, and knowledgeable traders. They've chosen to mix up their kind of use of these forecasts. They're using some options, they're purchasing options outright, and they're maybe selling some futures as well. But they're cutting back on the sale of futures, and they're focusing on options because the market does indeed get tricky before it does these bigger moves. And each one of these is different from the last and all that, but you have to go in and trade it. You know, it's very easy, and you have to be careful with trading systems, methodologies or systems that show you after the fact stuff. One of the things that happens on this radio program, both Dwayne with Michael trading in the trading room, they're dealing with real markets in real time. What we're doing when we're on the radio is we're forecasting that these certain things are going to happen, and we're doing that in advance of those things happening. We're not coming after the fact and saying, we said this, this is what happened. We're trying to do the real thing, which is what everybody would have to do if they're trading. A lot of systems and methodologies don't go to that extent, and they can make very good explanations for what has happened and how their system actually called that. But the problem is that in real time, that means at the time when their system may have been calling for something, it may have been literally impossible for you to get into a move, or maybe it just didn't look at all like the move was going to happen. You know, it's in real time that the magic happens or doesn't happen. So keep that in mind. I want to give you an example. I don't mean to hammer on Elliott Wave, but I just want to say that's a really good example of a methodology that after the fact can come back and then say, see, this was your beautiful wave two, and look how beautiful we have a wave three here, then the wave four. But in real time, it's very difficult for many, many people, having been doing this for many years, and I used to be an Elliott Wave guy myself, and you literally almost have to get into a 12-step program to get off of Elliott Wave. In fact, I'm thinking of opening up a course for people to get their heads out of that. Just half joking with that. But seriously, when people get into counting waves, once you've been doing that for years, that's all you see. You can't stop seeing these waves. And, you know, and then the waves within the waves and the waves within the waves and all that. And this is a wave three inside of a wave five, which an ABC correction inside of a C wave. And before you know it, and our minds love this because it's so definable. But the problem is that it's not tradable. It's very difficult to trade it. It's very difficult to let that wave counting thing let you get in. And even the very best Elliotticians, the people who look at this pattern-based recognition methodology, you put two of them in a room, and one of them is going to come out alive, and one of them is going to be dead, because they both believe completely different things about the exact same market. And there is something grotesquely wrong with any methodology that has that much difference between what one person thinks and another one thinks. It can't be that different. That means that it's really subjective. Very, very subjective methodology. And there are some people that have traded Elliott in a sense and done very well with it. But in the end, what I'm warning you about are methodologies. I'm not going to name any other names, but I'm just saying methodologies that are not being demonstrated in real time or forward. You know, in other words, they're not telling you in advance something, or they're not doing like what a Michael is doing, trading in real time. That's where the rubber meets the road. Okay, there is a road, there is rubber, and that's where
and
it meets
meet.
It.
Yeah, you know, whether you ever become a Page Trader client or whether or not you ever become a CFRN partner, all that aside, this is important and critical advice to you regarding whatever form of education that you pursue in regards to trading. Because it is, as David said, you can take any system, any methodology, you can go find some charts, you can curve fit the data, and you can make anything look like Shinola. And I think you know what the other stuff is. I won't say that on Christian Family Radio, but anything can be made to look like Shinola after the fact. Shinola is the good stuff, all right? Now, what you have to ask yourself is, wow, this is stunning. I mean, just nailing it time after time after time. Okay? You know, what will happen is sometimes you'll get emails like on a Tuesday about what a great day we had, and then you don't hear anything for a few days or a few weeks, and then you get another email with a chart that shows, you know, how, you know, stupendous that particular day or that trade was. Always ask yourself, well, what happened in between those two emails? And don't hesitate. In fact, I encourage you to email or contact that vendor if they have a phone number. Oftentimes they don't, but there is an email address usually. You don't email them and say, hey, I got the email on this date and I got the email today, and wow, that really looks spectacular. Can you give me some idea of what happened in between. And if you get a response, that's good. That's a good sign. And say, okay, now, can you give me some idea of how this actually plays out? You know, I mean, in here's the thing. If you can't see this operate in real time, in some manner, some way, like David has the Messenger Pro product where there are signals going out during the live market when the market is moving. When we're in the trading room, you know, it's live charts, prices are moving, we're putting on and taking off trades right in front of you. So what you need to ask, then this person may go, well, I don't have a trading room, and, you know, they'll give you the reason, and that's fine if they don't want to have it. I'm not saying that they, you know, should have a trading room or something to prove to you that they're legitimate. But if you're about to spend a significant sum of money, okay, you need some kind of evidence or some kind of guarantee or some kind of free trial period to figure out if this thing can even possibly come close to doing what the advertising says that it does or is capable of doing. And if they can't satisfy that in some manner, again, I'm not saying that they, you know, should go open a trading room just because I say they should, but they should have some way of showing that to you. Otherwise, you're buying a pig in a poke. It's a blind thing, and I don't know. I just can't. Like, again, I'm not saying come be a Page Trader client or a CFRN partner. Of course, we want that because we want you to be a part of our community and our family and all of that, blah, blah. We're running a business. But we do our very best to show you how this thing works in real time. And in doing that, we run the risk of you seeing that what we do is not only real, but sometimes painful. Sometimes we get stopped out. Sometimes we get stopped out a couple times back to back, maybe even three. But you know what? That's the truth about trading. So, you know, if it's one of these deals, $19.99, $49.95, you're not risking a whole lot. But if somebody's wanting to sell you something for, you know, a large sum of money, you need some proof that it's that it works. Okay?
Yeah. One thing I'd like to throw in on that, and this is just we didn't plan on being on the subject, but one thing,
no.
There are probably some other good systems that actually do well out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. It's fine. We can all agree that they're probably out there. But I've been around the block more than a few times, and I just want to let you know, the majority of what is out there, the guy who developed it cannot trade it. That's it. If the guy who develops it can't trade it, I'm not so sure anybody should be buying that from him. So that's all I'm saying. You know, we want to be able to have the confidence if we're looking at something. And I do look. I look around, and it's not just for the interest of seeing what's out there just to make fun of it or something. I don't want to necessarily do that. I'm interested because I know that there are smart people that can come up with interesting ideas and actually get a new edge on the market. And I'm interested in that. I'm interested in a new edge. I actually love the markets. I want to find a new edge. Dwayne does as well. But a lot of it, if they can't demonstrate that they can do it themselves, either through one of many means, whether they're making a call in real time or perhaps what we do on this radio program a lot, which is the forecast markets using our methodologies, or perhaps worst case showing you an authenticated trading statement for a period of time, more than a month, you know, something where they just didn't have a lucky month or something, something to get you to show that they have something. Other than that, I'd be very leery. And I don't know how exactly we got to that, the subject, but the subject, it's an important one because there's so many, the methodologies that there are that can explain beautifully what has happened already, but in real time they have a great deal of difficulty trading it. It's just the way that the signals lay out. So it's not so easy, and that's where the skill comes in, that's where the risk-taking comes in, and that's why traders come to a community like this. We sit and we talk about markets. We try to get the best ways to get into markets. We want to get good levels that mean something and all that and on and on and on. So it is doable. Trading is doable. And I'm more than happy. Like I said, on our next webinar, we're going to show two sets of statements. Both of them have been reviewed by brokers. So Bert Schlichter as an example. But the fact is that no matter what it is, you do want to find some proof that the person himself that developed it, And listen, there may be a guy that develops something that he can't trade it, but it can still be a good idea. And that's why I'm out looking around, because I am always interested. I was lucky enough to bump in some very unusual ways of looking, and I know other people are out there that can do that as well. But be careful. Like Dwayne said, the $49 thing is okay, but if you're going to spend more than that, it's a good idea to be able to see it actually work in real time, or statements, or whatever, to convince yourself that you do have something of real value there, because it is easy after the fact. And Elliott Wave is one of the greatest ways to tell people that all kinds of things could have been forecast, when in real time it would have been practically impossible for anybody to step up at that moment based on that one setup or that one kind of thing that they're showing you. It's a particularly good example of a highly, highly subjective thing. The less subjective a methodology is, the better off you're going to be in the end. I really believe that's the case. The objectivity is a very important part of a high-quality methodology or trading system. Okay, so let's see. Let's move on just a little bit further. We were already at crude, and we passed through that. Had a couple other little markets, Dwayne, and then we'll be through the markets.
Okay.
We have both a forecast for a top in the dollar, a bottom in the euro, like I said a minute ago, for the euro. But even I'm not crazy about buying the euro, because even though we get the bounce, I do believe lower prices are coming. The dollar, we have a top in it for a multi-day sideways to lower. And that probably is going to be the same thing, where whatever turn comes, it's the dollar is probably going to end up at higher prices after that. So just be cautious with that. And those of you who have reflected wave, use caution in that as well. You can call me if you are a reflected wave student. You're more than welcome to call and see what we're doing with it specifically and so on, or if we're just leaving it alone. So let's see. I don't know if there's anything else I have to cover here today, Dwayne. Cocoa, I use that sometimes in my milk, and I stir it, and it mixes in, and it's very tasty. I don't have anything with that. Sugar.
Okay.
I put that in the cocoa.
Question. Frank wants to know if you got anything on the 6J, the yen.
I don't have anything on the yen, and I forgot to put something up on it. But I do have.
Thing. Look at this. This is a daily chart. I mean, look at that thing. It's just. I mean.
Yeah.
There's a bottom somewhere, I guess.
I know. The yen, I will say this, this yen is one of the favorites among trend followers. Because this market tends to just go day after day after day in directions once it gets into a trend. It can be traded very effectively as a trend following type of deal. So, you know, here we are in a very, very powerful trend. I remember early in the 90s, the Japanese yen was tanking and there was all kinds of things going on. Something to consider. I don't have anything on it today. If I did, I would be happy to give it to you. I do want to remind you, though, the last thing that we talked about several times about the natural gas market, our bigger outlook is for lower prices, continued lower prices, into next week. So we may have a roadmap out on that soon as well. So I think that's it, Dwayne. That's everything we've got. You know, Robin's not here. Gosh, thank God we don't have to talk about soda. Good Lord. No, I'm just joking. And then.
Oh, you're so tough on her.
Oh, I mean, you know, you gotta keep her in line. She's a tough girl. I'll tell you something. I happen to, you know, I only know Robin through the program, and she's a tough girl. This is a girl who can take care of herself, and she knows what she's doing. She knows how to deal with people, and I've seen it. I mean, she can be very, very blunt, and she can be very kind, and also. But you know, the more I've gotten to talk with her, to be honest with you, my first impression wasn't so good. I wouldn't be afraid to say that to her. But over time, I got to see where she's coming from, more in action, rather than just, you know, hearing it on the radio. I've seen how, when I speak with her, and from the time to time that she lives here in Las Vegas and I've had lunch with her, and I've gotten a chance to see how she prods and pushes to get you to say something or get to a spot psychologically. So I don't know that she does that in necessarily the way that I see it in her seminars or her webinars and so on, but I think one-on-one, you know, she's gonna get it out of you. So just, you know, I think there's some value there. I really do. It's not sweet talk. And you don't want it. You don't want sweet talk. If you're trying to straighten something out and trying to work a problem through, the something that's bothering you about your approach, something where your own behavior is leading rather than, you know, you, like we talked about earlier, it can be very useful to have some. I mean, it really can be very useful, even if it's not a Robin Dane or a coach, even if it's a friend that helps you, that has some knowledge. You can be of great help to other people who are going through problems. You've probably done it in your life. And a professional that knows about trading and knows about how traders think and stuff, it can be helpful for you to get over behaviors that are leading you, even though you may be saying to yourself you're leading the behavior. They can see through that, and they can adjust and fix that. And you'd be very happy to, you know, anybody would be very happy to get rid of some of these issues that I wish I would have gotten rid of many, many years sooner. It would have saved me a lot of money. And silly trades and bad nights and stuff like that. So for those of you who are looking or interested in talking to somebody about your trading or an issue, don't be afraid to talk to somebody about it, because don't be afraid of your own problems. Fear of your own problems is the problem, because you wouldn't have that problem. It wouldn't be reoccurring if you weren't somehow afraid of it. You're not. It's not that you have to confront it like a battle. You have to understand your way through it. It's not a battle. It's not a fight. It's not you against the kid in junior high school. It's to see something, to understand something. But sometimes these pictures that flash through our minds, they play scary movies, and then, whoosh, we just turn away from it, and we don't want to touch it again. And there's a wonderful sense of, I don't want to call it accomplishment, but, you know, for lack of a better word, when you're able to see through something and see through the bluff of it, and now you're free of it, and that bluff can't do it to you anymore. You're free of the bluff, and there's really something beautiful in that, and freeing, and there's a sense of accomplishment. I don't know how to put it into words, but if you're having trouble with a particular thing, I would encourage you to either to call somebody or perhaps to let Robin Dane work with you a little bit. And I'm not talking about her here to promote her business. I'm talking here to help you get over a particular problem. That's what I'm doing. If that happens to be something that you have to pay a little money for, then maybe you should do that. Maybe you should pay a little money to kind of leapfrog ahead and get a problem resolved that's been bothering you. Where a behavior has been dragging you, you're not dragging the behavior, it's dragging you. And we all know that we have that in areas, and it does happen in trading. There's no two ways about it. I've been through it many times. So there you are. So I think that's everything we have for today, Dwayne.
All righty. Reminder.
Covered a lot of ground.
Reminder, Coach's Corner with Robin is today at 3 p.m. Eastern. And when the radio show ends, just leave this window open, and we'll start at 3 p.m. promptly. There was a question, David, if you had anything at all, any thoughts on Apple? It is
with cheese, actually. It's pretty good. I mean,
apple with cheese.
Yeah, apple cheese is not bad. Sauce.
I've seen those party trays that have apple slices and cheese slices.
Don't they look good? You have to admit that looks nice.
Yeah. So, guys, we had the death cross here, as we've talked about. And this one actually had some follow-through, pretty substantial. The question is now, can Apple get back to 500 and over 500? 500 is a psychological round number, and it also happens to be the area where we've got that 50-period moving average. So, and we haven't filled this gap yet. So
I'll throw a little in, too, when you're through.
Yeah,
I have a couple little things about Apple. First of all, I am concerned about Apple, you know, fundamentally, because Steve Jobs is gone, and it seems like just emotionally, the longer he's gone, the more I find myself not quite so enamored with Apple. And I wonder if other people are feeling the same way, that, you know, there is a initially it was like, oh, that's okay, they're really great, and then day by day, week by week, and suddenly I'm thinking, you know, Apple, I'm not sure it has the same magic quite that it had when I knew Steve Jobs was alive. This may just be me. But I am concerned also about Apple's future and about whether they can continue to innovate at the ridiculous pace that he was innovating at, and I don't expect them to be able to, but it worries me. So I think others may be in that same category. So that's number one, just as an emotional thing. Number two, we had originally been calling for a bottom in Apple for the month of December. They just made January now, a new low, and that's 1 month late. But having done that, I was on the program and I said, I think it would probably be wise, rather than taking the 1 month late monthly bottom, probably be wise to allow the second quarter to not buy this if you're really looking for the longer term move. And you're conservative, like I am, and you can be conservative and do pretty good in the markets. You don't have to be aggressive to do pretty good. In fact, you know, I think there may be a good argument to be made that, you know, somewhere in the middle between aggressive and real conservative, you can do very well. Anyway, the second quarter of this year is really, I would want to wait before I would really go all out and buying anything, you know, if I was going to buy a longer-term position in Apple. Now, having said that, if we get into the second quarter and if the 1 month late monthly bottom holds, which was the January bottom, that would be fine and we will have missed some entry here. But the second quarter may well give us a second opportunity to get long at a point, and I would expect to see Apple trading at $585 after that bottom. So we're at 477 now, and this is a no-brainer. When they finish this bottom, whether it's finished in January or whether it actually semi-double bottoms or even goes deeper in the second quarter for what we're talking about, the long entry in the second quarter, either way, that's where I'm trading to, 584, 585. So now I can do that. Obviously, we can do that with shares of stock. We can also sell puts. We could also buy calls. I wouldn't suggest the buying of the calls, but I would suggest the idea of selling time premium and repeating that as the market continues to move off of this, I think, more conservatively called a quarterly bottom. That's what I would do. And I would say that an aggressive person could take the January 1 month late, January bottom, and he could be aggressive and realize he may have to live through a little bit, but he also may get in really early here and for the shot up. The more conservative person, I know it's a long time, the conservative guy waits for the second quarter. And we'll be able to, they won't be up at 584 in the second quarter. We'll be able to do something with it. But don't count Apple out is my final thing, is that in spite of the emotional content of Steve Jobs' death and his absence and his influence not being there, the fact is that I think there's going to be a pretty impressive bounce off of this bottom. So we're interested in doing something with it, but we're going to wait a little longer, at almost certainly at least another month or so before we make any decision in our stock trading to sell puts below this or whatever. And so, Dwayne, we can continue to talk about it as, you know, the days and weeks go by, but I'm planning on the market going back up to 585 or higher from whatever purchase we make. So that's what our outlook is.
Okay. So. All right. Well, we'll continue to watch it.
Well, there you are.
And we'll continue to use their products, whatever happens to the stock. The products are pretty...
I'm not giving my iPhone back, even if they come and ask me for it. I'm keeping the darn thing.
All right,
Mr.
guys,
Williams, we'd like your iPhone back. I'm sorry, I'm not giving it to you. Go ahead. What was that, Dwayne?
I was just going to remind everybody one more time, 3 p.m. Eastern. We're going to break for 45 minutes. We'll be back at 3 with Robin for the Coach's Corner.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me on, Dwayne. Thanks for the questions, everybody, and I look forward to seeing you guys. Have a wonderful weekend. Get some exercise, if I may say so, and eat well, and I'll see you on Monday.
Okay, David.
You too, Dwayne.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys soon.
All right. Bye-bye now.
I didn't notice what time it was.
Guys, that does wrap it up for us, not only for today, but for the week, except for the fact that we'll be back in 45 minutes with Robin Dane, the trading coach, for this week's edition of the Coach's Corner. You don't have to close this room down and log in somewhere else. All you need to do is leave this room open, this window running, and we'll appear We will appear in 45 minutes. And today's topic is procrastination. So don't put off listening to the show. Just come on over. And we will create a podcast, as we always do. But the beauty of being there in real time is that you can ask questions. Okay? She'll talk for 10, 15 minutes. Then we'll open the floor for any questions that you guys have. And we always like the questions. It's nice to, you know, have participation. So do come if your schedule permits. Stay safe, stay warm, stay dry over this stormy weekend for all of you there on the East Coast. Most of all, stay safe. A great time to take the free trial, because you can download the platform today, install the indicators today, and as long as you have electricity over the weekend, you can work with the charts, you can look at different markets, you can look at different time frames. We do have indicators other than the ones that we use in the live trading room. We do have setups that we use other than the one we use in the live trading room each day. If you want to get a feel for that, you can go back through the blog over the last few years. That's another good way to spend your weekend. You can go to youtube.com/CFRN. There's some different videos there about different ways of trading and using our indicators. You can also go to youtube.com/eMiniFuturesTrading. You can also go to the blog and do a little search on the blog index page for, or you can do this. This is probably the easiest way of all. Google.com. You may have heard of it. Just go CFRN, the year in pictures. Got to spell pictures right. CFRN, the year in pictures. There you go, right there. It pops up to the top. In fact, you'll see even here, you know, images, but if you click on that, it will take you here. And if you click that chart right there, and then when you get here, choose the slideshow option. And it starts in January of 2012, and it walks you through the year. It shows you tweets, it shows you weekly trading zones, it shows you just a little bit of everything. If I'm not mistaken, there's 700 and something slides in this slideshow. So sit back, a cup of warm cocoa, and enjoy the show, all right? It is the weekend, so please spend some quality time with your family. Of course, I'll see you all in church on Sunday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.